Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. About 1 minute past the half hour. It's KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. How are you this evening? Are you all ready for World Watchers and the horrendous news that we share each week? I've been down in Los Angeles most of the week. It seems like I've been gone 100 years. It's really weird to get back and be doing the thing I really like the most. It's hard being there, but I have to go. But it seems so far away. I have all the newspapers and all the work I keep up with as usual, but it's good to be back. Now, this is a talk program, the first half, first 30 minutes, chance to talk back. The telephone's ringing before I give the numbers. Let's start right off. Hello?
Calling from Santa Cruz.
Okay, hi.
Hello, how are you?
How are you?
Well, a little bit apprehensive. Is it true that I can communicate anything that's really on my mind or how I really feel?
You mean on the program with May?
Yes.
Nothing vulgar, no four-letter words or profanities.
Nothing like that.
Oh, you mean just an emotion or a feeling?
Yeah, just a perception I have.
Oh, yeah. We'll make it a little bit shorter this evening in case others want to call in. Yeah, tell me how you feel. What's on your mind?
It'll take me about 5 minutes.
Okay.
To put my thoughts together.
5 minutes to say how you feel?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit. I was last Monday night was watching TV after listening to your program.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Lyndon LaRoche.
Mm-hmm.
And I called about 3 months ago, and I told you that someone had sent me some of his publications.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd read a couple articles by him after that. And now I see him on TV, and I know you've had some callers since then.
Yes.
Did you happen to see it?
Well, no, he's like a record that's wound up. If you've heard him once, you can just about tell what he said. And I take his newspaper, so I read what he has on the air.
Yeah.
He has, when he has these television, these expensive shows, they're pre-printed, so I read them.
Right.
Yeah.
See, this was a pitch for president.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it was interesting. He said, you know, basically that we had two choices, either nuclear war or vote for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's probably right.
Yeah. You know, my first
in other words, all we're left with is nuclear war.
Right.
Okay.
My first thought was, you know, here's another crank like Gary Arnold down here at Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You know, he's got his conspiracy theory, right?
Yeah.
And it's this incredible weaving, you know, of half-truth and pure fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody is infiltrated by the communists, including the International Nazi Party.
Mm-hmm.
So, figure...
Yeah, he always talks about the Nazi KGB.
Yeah, left and right has no meaning anymore.
Well, I almost agree.
Uh-huh.
I almost do agree. I really don't know where the difference is.
I see.
You see, 40 years ago, there was a big struggle to grab the Nazis when the war was over for useful purposes by both governments. We weren't, you know, the only ones that were tainted by grabbing the Nazi war criminals. They left a hunk of them and took a hunk for their space scientists and for other things. And there were czarists in there that never did like, just happened to live there and never changed in Eastern Europe that were sympathetic. All along, I mean, Poland fell in, 48 hours to Hitler, so just because the Soviet Union annexed Poland as a buffer doesn't mean that everyone there isn't sympathetic to Hitler.
Uh-huh.
See, they may not vote that way because they're afraid to vote, and some do. They're not so open. But Romania and some of these other countries, too, Czechoslovakia and so forth, the Iron Curtain, Lithuania and so forth, they took those as their right, having lost 20 million people and lost the war. So that what they have are a hunk of population waiting for somebody to release them someday who hate what they're doing and also sabotage where they are and stir up a lot of trouble subtly, not enough to go to jail, but in ways that you wouldn't understand that they've worked their way up in the last 40 years.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah, well, I don't know. You know, then you're left with this absurd conclusion that the Nazi movement was a communist plot.
You don't have to go that far.
Yeah,
when he talks about the Nazi KGB, I never could understand, at the time of the Vietnamese War, forget North Vietnam and South Vietnam, I mean, what they were,
Ho Chi Minh wanted to work with the American government, wanted the French out, and there was this conflict going on. At the height of the Cambodia bombings, at the height of the cages we had, the Brown and Root built, and the, put people in as animals, and the Phoenix program, and torture, they entertained Richard Nixon. If the Soviet Union really wanted to put, say, the way they have organized their country for food and communes and housing, they certainly have not helped, say, a country like Vietnam after the war. They have not, wherever they've gone, they, if they had turned, our, say, Afghanistan into an annex of the Soviet Union where there's total employment, 100% employment, 100% health care, long life, and housing, and got the mafia out, there would be a reason to take one more buffer to protect that border. But they haven't put anything in there, which is what, you know, the Nazis raised a place and didn't put anything there. So they're not really behaving as if the interest of the native population is their concern either.
Yeah. Well, getting back to LaRouche anyway, I know that you have stated that you do get information from him.
Well, it's public information. It's not private. I'm not in touch with him.
Oh, I see. I know publicly, yeah. I mean,
he publishes.
You say he does. He investigates things that people, you know, don't want to touch. But I think, you know, as I listened to him, my point was that I sort of became a true believer because I think he's a force to be reckoned with simply because he represents an organized attack on something. And that I think he's one of the people who know who the real enemy is. And even though in this talk, and this is what I wanted to address tonight, he went after the Club of Rome,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is a bunch of international scientists who are...
After genocide, yeah.
Yeah. He went after Daniel Graham in the High Frontier,
mm-hmm.
the Nuclear Freeze Movement, Kissinger, of course,
mm-hmm.
and Kissinger is a communist, as you have pointed out to him,
mm-hmm.
he's a communist. But he went after the New Left in general.
I never said Kissinger was a communist.
No, he does.
Yes, I know.
Either you or a caller had mentioned that he thinks Kissinger is...
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And then he went after what else?
So now he goes after all these people. But, you know, the more I listen to him, I don't think that's his real enemy. And this is what I want to address tonight, if I may. And it might take me a few minutes to get it
okay,
out.
Make it kind of quick because it's 20 up. About two more minutes. Yeah.
He goes after what he talks about is pseudoscience, mysticism, and communist-inspired, also the ancient Gnostic cults, the Dionysic cults, and then and he writes his sort of pseudo history. He writes about these cults,
mm-hmm.
and then he goes to TM and communist inspired Esalen based institutions in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think he really knows who the enemy is because at least since the 60s,
mm-hmm.
We've had a sort of a new consciousness, a new Gnosticism, a new Dionysianism in this country,
mm-hmm.
that has affected the political scene,
mm-hmm.
because as one writer says, he says, it seems that we are at one of these moments when the whole meaning of nature, self, civilization is overturned,
mm-hmm.
in a revisioning of history as important as any technological innovation or political revolution.
Who wrote that?
A man named Irvin William Thompson. It's in a book called The Edge of History.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that's coming out is a lot of scholarship on these movements. And if you take the trouble to study these movements and you study current history and the 60s, you can see that the energy for transformation in this culture is coming out of these suppressed movements.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, I'm very suspicious that a person like LaRouche, who represents, I think, an organized effort through history to suppress these movements,
mm-hmm.
that he attacks them now, and he attacks Esalen,
he always has.
The whole human potential movement, and after all...
See, but I don't agree
John Lennon, as you say, was killed, because he was a very symbolic person.
But Lennon... Lenin was an individual. Esalen had a tremendous amount of mind control. It was completely infiltrated by government people, and like the Timothy Leary types or Skinner. And if you look at the list of the Esalen people, it was such a pseudo hogwash. It gave nothing for the 80s.
Well, I don't know. I disagree with you. I think.
Well, when I moved here,
I think it gave birth to the whole human potential movement.
No, it didn't. No,
no. I don't think you can separate.
I don't think it did at all. I think I'm older than you, and I remember the 60s very well, and I've lived up here 20 years. And at the time, I thought it was the greatest thing going, you know, this kind of human potential. It took away from people very important ingredients for their survival and for their quality of life. Their human potential is less now than it ever was.
I don't think so. I disagree with you.
Well, just the ride down the streets and watch these people just jogging with their earphones on.
I think there's a shadow side to all these institutions.
Yes.
But it was a sort of paradigmatic institutions, and we have a lot of them. Now that these institutions are becoming political, or let's put it one step before that, when this kind of consciousness becomes institutionalized, you can go after it.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think the institutions have tried to embody some of the consciousness that has given birth to a new religious awareness, the human potential movement, and these are the people that LaRoche is going after, and I think people really...
See, I don't think those institutions... That. I used to think, you know, that the...
And I think this vision... I mean, John Lennon, intellectuals for the last three decades, at least since the 60s, have been attacking this kind of consciousness, the kind of consciousness that has taken some of the ideas out of these suppressed movements, and it has.
Well, you know what we're talking.
The intellectual establishment has, but now.
Wait. The problem is though that we're talking in generalities about movements
only,
and people. We have
the
to take.
Way we can talk about these.
No, you have to. Well, you use the term intellectuals. I don't know intellectuals. I really don't know what happened to intellectuals in America. What?
I'm a part of it myself, and I know for years. They've attacked even books like Irvin William Thompson's that I quoted from. They've attacked this new consciousness as responsible for Nazism, responsible for chaos, because it flies.
Well, then there's that's a contradiction. They're not intellectuals. If they're attacking all of that, what kind of intellectuals are they?
Yeah.
Are they superficials?
Yeah. But, you know, I think what I'm trying to say is I think the real battle that's going on today is between different worldviews. And I think that both the Christian worldview and the scientific worldview are the worldviews that need to be supplanted, and the worldviews that are attacked by or are threatened by the human potential movement in general. I don't know. I mean, I'm using that term for lack of a better term. Okay? And someone like William Blake was not fooled. I mean, we are taught to believe that science and Christianity are enemies. But Blake saw a marriage going on in the 18th century between Christianity and science.
Well,
and
in the 18th century, you had time for intellectuals.
Yeah.
The 20th century, there's no time, believe me, for intellectuals. They are so rare. I mean, you had the Thomas Manns, and people that really thought things out, and people like Fassbinder are murdered, or people like Ingmar Bergman even are discredited and harassed and blacklisted. Charlie Chaplin's kicked out of the country. There are very few literary intellectuals. What has happened is that the technology has leaped and bound and is multiplied just as bacteria does, but the human being hasn't changed to keep up with the technology, so he's overwhelmed by it.
That's one of the points that this new worldview wants to emphasize, that, you know, we are still apes with fancy gadgets.
And
there has to be a transformation of consciousness.
I think the real intellectual is the person who can put down the gadgets.
Okay. Well, I think one of the things that, that these movements, the very movements LaRoche attacks, this new paganism,
mm-hmm.
and I'm suspicious of I think, you know, it sounds to me like Christian paranoia. I don't know. I don't know what his personal religious persuasion is. But when you take the time and you study church history, at least from the time of Justinian, where Christianity became a state religion, it became a political force. And there was a concerted effort to suppress all history and distort all history.
Yeah, well, eventually.
Yes. And that has continued.
Yes.
And science didn't change that at all.
No, there's always been that silencing that voice, but...
Right.
If,
what I'm saying is, I think LaRoche...
But some things deserve to be silenced. Not silenced, but I mean, don't...
Well, if they were given a chance at all.
I think there's been a lot of chance the past 20 years in the 1960s and 70s, and now we're up to 84, to see some flowering of intellect in what we're getting, more Michael Jacksons and Brooke Shields than we ever had before.
I am generalizing, but I don't think that that is a product... of the human potential movement. I think every
No, but they are winning.
Has its dark side.
No, but
and certainly.
If you can do a tour and make 30 or 40 million just dancing around with.
They're the new Frank Sinatras. I mean,
they
may be. Put up with these people for
listen,
years.
Listen, let me take some other calls and I'll talk about LaRoche another time. We'll get back to it. Because I think that we're going to go around in circles and I don't want to spend a lot of time. On the talk show, maybe some other time we talk about.
I just wanted to make the point that I think that he's dangerous in that sense. I don't know how anyone else feels, but as far as, you know, the new science of ecology, these movements are, these ideas of these suppressed movements have been coming out
of
ecology, and the only political movement that's aware of it today, unfortunately, is the women's movement. They're aware of the connection between these ancient movements and politics, and no one else is bringing them out except the theorists of the women's movement. Anyway,
well,
that's all I have to say.
Okay, we'll get back. Listen, thanks a lot for calling, and maybe someone will.
Okay, I'll give some of you a long time. If you want to call in, now, Lyndon, we'll 375-3082. And for those of you, okay, we'll take a call now. For those of you who are not familiar with the format, we take calls. I take calls till 8, and then you have 1 hour of straight news without calls. Hello?
Hello, ma'am.
Yes.
I've been a listener for a long time.
Okay.
Also was a gate guard at Esalen in the late 60s.
Okay.
For a number of years.
What did you think of this?
I'm familiar with your scene and who came through there and what they learned.
Yeah,
I called for something else.
Okay, tell me about something else and we'll get back to that
maybe.
Okay,
there's three stories breaking real quick.
Okay.
One of them was the British tonight on the news have an article out about the spy flight 007.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to do a half hour on that tonight.
Okay,
I figured
you would.
Yeah. I have a lot of good articles. I thought I would go with some London Times articles the last few weeks. I've been waiting to outline them, and so when I heard this story, I spent about 6 hours today working on them.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And the other story that broke this week was the assassination
of the Pope?
John Paul I.
Yes.
Poisoning of the Pope.
Boy, that's a great one. Last week I just mentioned that book that came out, and I'll be doing more. It's a humdinger. That book is so good. I just got an hour before I came into the station. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Well, everyone...
It's just an article I heard about this week.
Okay, everyone who can scrape up $17, you'll get your money's worth. In God's Name, it's called.
Uh-huh.
And if you can't put your name in the library, it's free. They'll order it, and you get your list, and it'll come through.
Uh-huh.
And if there's pages you want... The interesting thing is that there's 6 villains that he mentions in that book. I didn't ever do broadcasts on Cardinal Vio, the Secretary of the Vatican. His name... In terms of my research, he wasn't a primary person in terms of hitting the real scandals. But the other 5 that he says were part of killing the Pope, and he gives the motives, there's Paul Marcinkus, who I've done many hours on, and Licio Gelli, and Roberta Calvi, and Sindona, Michael Sindona, and Cardinal Cody from Chicago, and there's Gelli, Marcinkus, Sindona, and... Jelly and Cody. And I've been hitting those people constantly for a couple of years, so, and for the right reasons, and this book is so good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I was would sure like to get that. And another story that was, I just heard in passing that was kind of humorous, ha-ha. A couple of days ago, the Pope was visiting Switzerland and asked for moral improvement in their banking system.
Isn't that, I pulled that article to bring in, I call that the nerve of the week. You know, there's a Yiddish expression, chutzpah, I don't know if you've ever heard that.
Yes, I have.
But there's certain words in Yiddish, in fact, I have that book on how to talk Yiddish. Because I never used to hear it, and the expression, like one word has six meanings, like shalom or eight, depending on the way you do your voice.
Right, like
and,
aloha.
Yeah, yeah. And chutzpah just means it's so much nerve, you know, that it's just saying you have a lot of nerve, you have chutzpah. And he went there, and the first thing he did was chastise them for their banking system.
Right.
The very week that the Japanese bank is bailing out the Vatican by buying a Swiss bank, you know, how does he have the nerve? How does he...
I know. It's only been a couple of weeks since the Vatican offered $250 million or so to...
That's right.
...help those loans down in South America.
And here are these books about Marsica's forging stocks and counterfeiting money, and they're having these dummy fronts, and they won't tell you where they are, over $1 billion, and Calvi murdered because of his links to the Vatican. All this money tangled with the biggest Bank of Italy, and the president is killed, and his secretary goes flying out the window. And why didn't he just keep his mouth shut and talk about God? Why did he go there to talk about money?
Well, I don't know.
You know, when you bring it up, there's another thing that I may mention on the World Watchers part, but he went into Switzerland, he said, the first time since the 15th century, you know. He was in Geneva in June 18th, 1983, when Calvi was hung, in 82, when all those scandals were coming down, June 82, and Reagan was back, he went to London and then to Argentina, and the Pope was in Argentina, and he went to Switzerland, but he went for money business, not for God business. And they said he hadn't been there, and he has been in and out of there. So he was taking care of his banking deals, and then he scolds them. I don't know why he has the nerve to do that. And what's the other? So you got the Pope killing and the Pope banking and the...
And the link up of the space
Challenger.
And the satellite at the same time and the flight of the spy flight.
Yeah, now we have a new satellite that's supposed to go up this week, but they're going to postpone it for a week. Do you think they synchronize it like they schedule for a week and then make it a week later because they have a particular operation that's going to happen?
Well, at my level, I have no way of knowing why they do these sort of things.
Yeah, but that's pretty well synchronized to get Larry McDonald on a plane the same night that the Challenger's up there. And have Malone and all the others are in South Korea. I mean, you know that sync, you know? It's really funny. Well, what do you think about Esalen? How long were you there?
I've been on the inside and the outside.
Yeah.
And, I've seen it from... the inside, and I've seen it from the viewpoint of people that didn't like it, and I've been both inside and outside there.
I remember,
what you're talking about, where it has some control over the popular movement of whether, you know, Michael Jackson is a superstar or something like that. Esalen was originally, I don't know what it was originally, but when I got there, there was a certain level of
spiritualization
and adventurism.
Oh no, that was.
And it became very more middle class as time went on.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about what the ideal was when Fritz Perl and people went for a religious experience.
Right. Well, I worked for Fritz.
Yeah. Well,
he was a beautiful man. He was really a great person.
He was a great person. Now he moved up to Canada, and I went to visit his place up there. And the week we got there, he had just passed away. He was going to open up his own place up out of Duncan in British Columbia.
Uh-huh.
And the week that I got there, he had just died that week.
Right, well.
And, but the, that was...
some people that were working there with him.
Yeah, that's right. But
and
that
I
was...
back up for that trip.
Wasn't that Esalen at its heyday, at its richest?
I would say that was in a very adventurous mode, and that it became something that was tried to convey to more people, and it became like a more common experience, but I wouldn't say it was any lesser because more people learned about certain things.
Well, a lot of people, I remember going to we went down to the concerts, the Joan Baez and the Esalen.
Right, like those those times down there on the coast are totally etched in amber.
Oh,
really,
I mean, as long as I live.
Anyway.
I mean, it was a truly religious thing. We get up early in the morning and watch the fog like a curtain go up. And, you know, seeing these people and hearing them and climbing the mountain, the Chambers Brothers playing, I mean, it, and the people there, everything was great. Then it seemed to me that, and I know people from the CIA that began to go visit their people in mind control programs, people that worked for the government in Washington. Bernard Finsterwald from the committee, he was James McCord's lawyer, Committee to Investigate Assassinations, he flew into town and went down to Esalen. The government sent him there, and he represents Marianne Paisley and all kinds of mafia CIA people. What was he doing at Esalen? He hated hippies, and I knew him, and he came down. But a lot of weird people started getting into it just so they'd be familiar with it or to do something. I don't know what.
There was at no point in the late 60s that we considered that we weren't infiltrated by the establishment. At any point, we figured that even though our experiment in living was extremely different than the rest of the society, we figured that we were monitored.
Weren't you, by 1969... Isn't that when the changes begin to come?
More or less, yeah. Well, at the end of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, yeah. Then they took over.
War.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the war came home. You see, William Colby came over the Phoenix Program, became the director of the CIA here, and they took over all of these kinds of groups, most of them.
Uh-huh. Well, if you're in any of this movement, there is a chain that connects it all, and you know, that could be in Colorado or San Diego or Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And this chain that connects these various people, it wouldn't be that hard to infiltrate, really.
No.
People are trying to be open and expand themselves.
Oh, no, it's not hard at all. You just put on the beads and the sandals and your world beard and you're there.
Right.
I knew them all, I'll tell you. It was so bad. One of them who passed himself off as a hippie was this Peter Gilman, who wrote Diamond Head. I've mentioned it before, the programs. He and his wife, Carol, and his mother came up. He was from Pasadena and said, "Can't you get Peter to shave his beard? He never looked this dirty, you know." And she's complaining about his new role. And he's down with all the hippies on the coast, you know, and that kind of thing. Yeah, oh, no, they began to, they just dressed like them and took off the black pointed shoes and got the outfit and a few feathers and,
right.
And said right on.
A man with the right color decal in the window.
And the Gene McCarthy Daisy on the Volkswagen.
Uh-huh.
You bought a little equipment and they tried to meld in.
Uh-huh.
And other people couldn't distinguish the difference, so they got sucked into it.
Well, there is a difference if you're there every day and...
Oh, I know.
You know, weekends look different than weekdays.
I know what you mean. You don't generalize, but it did. It was a long way, I think, from the original feeling.
My point is I'm not saying yay or nay. I'm just saying that it opened whatever it was to more people.
Well, it opened it up for me.
If you say it's diluted, well, maybe the message got diluted, but mainly it was the same message just being transmitted to more people.
Maybe. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay, listen, thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Okay,
really enjoy your show.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'll be doing more on some of those subjects he mentioned, the Pope, not this week, and Aja next week, the shooting of the Pope. I want to update that and take some of these interesting subjects. There's one, maybe you didn't notice, but Edwin Meese trial. In fact, it was on TV last night. I didn't hear it, and a friend said that Edwin Meese has been subpoenaed. So we'll go into that. He's going to be at the trial of Marvin Pancos if he answers a subpoena. I don't know how he'll get off of it, but I guess he can worm his way out. Well, it's 1 minute of the hour, so I won't take calls and never lose a minute to ask you to subscribe to this station, send in your donations. We had the best fundraising we ever had, but you don't have to save it for that. You can send it in now if you want. Send in your money now to Kazoo. And I'll ask you again at the half hour. That's not the time that you run and disappear. You're supposed to listen attentively while I ask you to send to the station to help us keep the electric bills and whatever it takes to keep going on this station, and it's appreciated. You can write P.O. Box 206, Pacific Grove, California, 93950, and tell them how much you like listening to all the different programs on this station. They're good. Okay?